Live from the drive-thru window, and brought to you by McDonald's, home of the McRib, the legend is back. McDonald's, I'm loving it. I'm Delmon.
And I'm Alicious.
And this is EQ2 Talk. This is episode number 10, and we are recording on November 5th, 2010, and we still don't have theme music, Allie?
Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by.
Well, we have a lot to cover this week, and I have a bag of frozen Kit Kats that I still need to get back to. So let's get going on this podcast, shall we?
You still have Kit Kats left?
Well, half a bag of Kit Kats. The full bag was earlier this morning.
Man, my Kit Kats disappeared before the night was over.
I was going to say I had self-control, but no, I was finishing off the Reese's Peanut Butter Cups that night.
Oh, see, I actually gave mine to trick-or-treaters.
When they ring their doorbell, I take things out of their little buckets.
I see.
That's my treat. So, what have we been doing since our last podcast, Allie?
Well, Del, the last time we talked, I think I had been doing a lot of trade skilling. I sort of temporarily sidelined that because I realized the expansion is coming and I have an achievement that I wanted to get done before that. It's the EverQuester achievement, which is completing 5,000 quests, and I'm up to 4899 now. So I've been working on that, trying to get some more quests under my belt.
Now let me make sure I understand you correctly. When you say the expansion is coming, you mean the expansion that's coming in like 4 months from now?
Yeah. How easy do you think it is to get those last 101 quests?
I'm not sure, but I have to say you get the proactive award for this podcast.
Well, it's more procrastination, I think. Because there's a blank Mighty Mug sitting on my dining room table.
You should not have reminded me about that.
Yeah. Well, it seemed like a good idea at the time.
And it still is a good idea, and we will get to it. We just have to set that time aside.
Although I have to say I'm kind of disappointed that the achievement, that EverQuester achievement, doesn't come with a title.
What is the reward for it?
A cloak.
Okay. Is it a unique-looking cloak?
Yeah, I mean, it's blue. It's called the Shroud of the Shattering. But I've seen it around.
So it can't be that unique.
Maybe there's just more people who have 5,000 quests done.
I highly doubt that, but you would think it would be more questy. Shroud of the Shattering? Doesn't say, hey, I've done 5,000 quests.
I would love a prefix title. I think that 5,000 quests deserves a prefix title.
I think you're right. Unfortunately, though, I think the kind of the rewards for the achievements are somewhat set in stone. I don't imagine that changing.
No, I can't imagine that changing.
Maybe for 6,000.
Maybe 10,000.
That's a long ways away.
Not if they put more quests in the game.
That is true. You are somewhat mitigated by how many quests there are in the game to begin with.
Or bring back some of the ones they've taken out. Hint, hint.
Or stop taking them out.
Stop taking them out, yes. Put our drops back in.
So what have I been up to? More of the same. Lots of repetitive raiding. And I have to say, it is really getting ho-hum at this point. I am very much tired of Palace of Rowanthir, Labs, Lair, Palace of Rowanthir, Labs, Lair. It is really, really boring at this point. I don't know. I think it's attendance for us. Attendance for my guild is the greatest challenge for us right now. We cannot seem to get consistently 24 people. Well, let me take that back. We can't get consistent people, and we certainly cannot get 24. Whether or not those two things go together is two different things. So it's been a struggle for us. We get three groups regularly, sometimes a little less, Sometimes maybe one or two more, but I almost can't remember the last time we had a full 24 complement and we're able to actually take on some of the harder stuff. So we're kind of just, I feel a little bit rating for rating's sake, and I am really starting to check out and get bored during it. Less fun. Hopefully we can get those numbers back up. Hopefully the mergers that we've been talking about come sooner than later, and hopefully there will be enough free agents in those mergers to help us get our numbers up. Because I really would like to do something more than what we're doing. I'm losing focus on the raiding portion. And when I'm not raiding, I am mass slaughtering Drovelax.
Or Drolvargs.
Those are the things that are outside Karnor's castle.
Yeah.
And I have recently finished Ravrasek, and I think it said Yahali, the Fishman.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the Slayer titles for those, and just moments, Ellie, just moments, and this is breaking news here on EQ2 Talk, just moments before we started recording, I reached 5,000 Drovelags.
Wow. Well,
yes.
Congrats. I know you've been working at that for quite some time.
Yeah, it's what to do when there's nothing to do. So I've been doing that, and now I turn my attention to Cyclopses. And Cyclopses are the last one I need for a Slayer title. I don't know if there's some hidden achievement for getting Slayer, all the Slayer titles.
Well, you have to go for Destroyer next.
Yeah, then I got to go for Destroyer. I got to tell you, going from 2,500 to 5,000 is kind of boring. I can't imagine what it's going to be like to go from 5,000 to 10,000 on these things. If anyone on Unrest, or soon to be Najina plus Unrest, needs Lauren Legend parts for any of the monsters that are used in the Slayer titles, please see me on the broker. I believe I've undercut everybody at this point to ridiculous amounts. You need a Yahali Eye. You need a Drovelag Foot. You need a Ravrasek Pincher. I got them, and I got them in stacks at this point.
Awesome.
So that's really what I have been up to. Nothing, I guess nothing real exciting. Just hanging out, I guess.
Well, maybe you can work in a little mug painting.
I should. I need to get cracking on the mug, or it will be a white mug, and I'll be auctioning it off, calling it the Ghost of Alley.
Oh, let's not have that.
No. Should we also share with folks what we have been up to at EQ2Talk.com?
Let's do that, because it's very, very exciting. We have some new graphics, I guess, was one thing.
Yes, Allie, you did a wonderful job. You are far more graphic than I.
They're just screenshots, though.
And I was still impressed.
Okay. Well, it doesn't take much, does it?
No, it does not. Hey, I'm killing 5,000 Drovelags. What do you think it takes to impress me? 5,000 gray mobs. Woo!
So what's another exciting addition to our website, Del?
We have an enhancement. We have a tie-in now with Facebook.
Yes, we do. There's a little link on there you can click on and like us.
EQ2 Talk is on the Facebook.
We have a couple of dogs that like us already.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have a strong following in the canine community. I did not know dogs had as much access to iTunes and iPods and whatnot. But yeah, I'm thrilled to see how much we are liked by the dog community. So if you have a dog and he has Facebook or she has Facebook, have them like us too.
We need all the help we can get.
So, yes, if you go up to Facebook and search for EQ2 Talk, you will find us that way. You can also find Delmon and Alicious now on Facebook as well. So Delmon is looking for all the friends he can get. And frankly, I would like to have more friends than Allie, and that's not happening right now. So please, please, please be my friend. Won't you be my neighbor? I must have more friends than Allie. We should make this a little competition.
No, who is that's more, not a good idea.
Yes. Who is more liked on EQ2 Talk? Let the people speak.
Oh, no.
We will judge ourselves by how many friends we have. Do dogs count as half people?
Dogs count as whole people.
They're whole people. Okay, because I got a few of those as well.
You know, cats are welcome, too.
Cats.
I hear cats like us.
I was just going to say we don't have a lot of goldfish followers. We welcome listeners of all species to this show.
Do goldfish have ears?
I don't know. From what I hear, goldfish wouldn't remember it in 6 seconds anyways. Actually, goldfish would be great listeners Because I'm assuming they have to keep hitting the replay button because they forget that they listen to us every 6 seconds. So, yes, check us out on Facebook and, you know, some of the additional graphics that Allie had, did a wonderful job getting up on our website.
And let's not forget
yes?
the other addition to our website.
Yes. Why don't you talk about that?
Very small text under the Facebook little icon thingy. You will find a link to the Allie Angle, which is a new blog that I started, basically just to have a place to talk about things that I think about after we finish recording, maybe second thoughts. Actually, I do have a post up there called Second Thoughts on things that we've talked about on the show. And I actually posted the Scavenator pictures of the costume that I made for my son. Feel free to click over there and check it out.
I do have to say, Allie, you did a wonderful job on the Scavenator costume. I thought it looked fantastic.
And I saw Dell's mom appreciated it as well.
The Dell mom took a look at it too, and she was very impressed with your work. You did a great job. Was the wearer as happy with it?
He was very, very excited, yes. I have pictures of him scaring his friends. He was doing
excellent.
A little quacking thing. And I had a suggestion that we should have made eel ads for the Scavenator's parents.
Did the Scavenator have ads when he was out trick-or-treating?
He had many ads, actually.
Excellent.
He had many ads.
And he got a lot of fat loot that night?
Yes, he did. And he was complaining about his bag being too heavy. And I said, okay, it's time to go home then. If you can't carry your own candy.
If you can't carry your own candy, here, let me eat a little of it. All right. Over the past weeks between now and our last show, we have received quite a few emails.
We have.
Which is fantastic. I think, Allie, both you and I love getting the emails from the folks.
Absolutely love it.
And I thought we could go over a few of those now. So let's dig right in because there are quite a few of them, and I think we have a lot to say about some of them.
Yeah.
So let me start out with the very first one. This is from either Spider Z or Spiders. I'm not sure how he prefers to be pronounced.
I think he's Spiders.
Okay, then I'm going to say Spider Z.
Oh.
Because it's let me start out with the subject of his email. Shame, 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 Delmon. Dear Delmon the Misguided Templar, your statement on the last podcast, episode 9, stated that Unrest was a fairly dead server. Surprisingly, it was also the first server to have a guild clear the expansion. The guild, Equilibrium, cleared this expansion, the EQ2 guild, and he has a link to their progression here. Just figured I'd toss this your way and see you squirm a sec. Signed, Spider Z of the Luke and Delair server. Well, Spider, I'm sorry to disappoint. The Delmon does not squirm. The Delmon stands fast as to what he said. And actually, let's be all honest here. Allie was the one who said we were the slacking server.
Yes, it was Allie who said it, and I believe I said slacker, not dead. I wholeheartedly apologize to Equilibrium, because let's face it, they could just look at me and squash me like a bug.
This is true. I think the point we were making, though, was that Unrest is as you say, a slacker server. Yes, Equilibrium is way out ahead of the pack and is an amazing guild with what they accomplish. But after Equilibrium, there is a tremendous drop-off in the amount of guilds and what they're doing in terms of progression or competitive level rating. So I kind of stand by what we said. We are a behind-the-curve server. We were one of the last ones to finish the Druid Rings. Yes, we have one or two powerful guilds, but after that, huge drop-off, including my guild that can only seem to muster three groups at any point.
Yeah, I mean, he's talking about the cream of the crop.
He is. He really is.
In general, we were just speaking in general terms. And in any case, it was meant in a loving way.
Now, when you start out with Misguided Templar and shame, 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 there's no love. So, Spider Z, if that's what your real name is, I'm here in the podcast. Send me another email. There'll be no squirm. It'll be you, my friend, who squirms. from my awesomeness.
Oh, boy. Next email is from Sprouts, who we heard from before.
Yes, Sprouts. Love that name.
He says, hello again from your half-evil listener, Sprouts, who, if you recall, is on the Freeport server, right?
Yes, which is the free-to-play server.
Yes. That's why he's saying he's half evil.
Well, you didn't read his subject line.
I'm sorry. I didn't know I was supposed to read that.
Maybe we're not supposed to?
Well, I'll read it.
Okay.
Since you put it out there.
Fair enough.
His subject line is half evil big anus in New Alice.
I found that funny.
Of course you did. Hello again from your half evil listener, Sprouts. Before I forget, I did notice the Common Lands and Thundering Steps map was grayed out. Actually browned out where I started there. I believe Butcher Block was as well. But it has been a little while since I've been there, as I am working up my alts in New Hallis, so I can, well, try to keep up with you two. I'm two-boxing a human berserker named Magnus. So I guess he's trying to keep up with our alts, our noobs.
Yes, which right isn't too hard.
No, because we're sort of not doing anything right now. We're slacking.
Yes.
Actually, we're supposed to be noobing tonight, aren't we?
Friday nights is our normal noob schedule, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the letter. Sorry, going to go off subject for just a moment, because I found this very humorous when I named that character. The character names I'm using are from my UO days, although EQ2 does not let people double up on names, so I had to use some of my more uniquely named characters, like Savview. She was a healer in UO, and it's based off of the word save you. Anyway, back to Magnus. In UO, his actual name is Meganus, although the EQ2 name approver would not let me use that name, not because it had been taken, but because of something I had never noticed over the many years playing him. The word anus was in the name. I thought that was quite funny. And then I was a little horrified that other people might have picked that up and thought it was, I was a Meg anus instead of a Meganus. Just one of those crazy MMO moments. Back on track now. Great story, by the way.
Yeah, I love this story.
My second character in New Hallis is a human Templar named Watts. That name came from a little nod to the 80s movie, Some Kind of Wonderful. Watts was a female character from that movie. So there you have my own little two-character group, Magnus and Watts. At the moment, they're both level 17 adventurers. And Magnus is a level 18 outfitter working towards Weaponsmith. Watts is a level 10 scholar working towards being a sage. Also, Watts has taken on the very difficult adorning skill. Are you giggling in the background?
No.
I hear you giggling.
Okay, I'm trying not to.
I thought that was my job.
He said Mega Anus.
Are you okay?
No. Okay, keep going. I'm sorry.
All right. This is definitely a skill that a newbie would pass over, and I'm finding it quite difficult even...
I'm trying.
And I'm finding it quite difficult even when I planned ahead to do it. I'm stuck at level 14, so I'll have to go back and kill some greys in order to get some drops to transmute to level 15, so I can transmute the level 8 gear I'm packing around. I have to say, Sprouts, this is all your fault for your mega anus story, because Delmon, the infant, can't keep it together. You all right there?
I'm all right now.
Okay, very serious now. Anyway, I'm at the Cave of Ill-Boding Dark for the second time, going in to kill a named mob. Sorry, away from home right now, so that is about as specific as I can get. I did smirk when I read the note about the fish guts, although I did not do that quest. I did find the shortcut to New Hallis. I worked my way around through the basilisks. Even though they were yellow, my two characters were able to handle pulling one at a time to make it to New Halas so I could start my crafting. I did find that they made New Halas a lot more user-friendly than Kellithen. The bank is near the crafting area as well as your beginner housing. Very nice. Although I feel it is a shame that I will most likely be moving my other characters over to New Halas just because of that convenience. I do really enjoy the look and feel of Greater Faedark over the snow of Frostfang. I'll stop there as I've realized I'm writing another book. Sorry about that. Hey, if anyone needs someone to group with on the Freeport server, I'm usually on in the evenings, Central Standard Time, during the week, and I'm totally fine with not powering through sections. I'm not a power gamer, and I enjoy the lower levels. Good hunting, Sprouts. Savview, Meganus, and Watts. I like this letter because he mentions a few things. The crafting area being near the bank. Can't say enough about that, because when you're crafting, you really need to have quick access to stuff, especially when you're making a lot of things and you want to dump them off, get more money, get more raw materials, etc.
Yeah, he makes a good point there. You think of the starter city, Kellithen. Although Kellithen is somewhat true to the look and feel of that it was in the original EverQuest, it is very confusing and very... It's a place that makes me think of, I can see where I want to get to, but I have no idea on how to get there.
Yeah, I find myself jumping down a lot and sometimes all the way down by accident.
Yeah. So Halas, I think over time the design team has learned, well, you know, what may work in terms of look may not work in terms of function.
Right.
So I think they've done a great job of fitting those together in New Halas where things of like are together. Like yeah. Rit Givers and the Chronomage are somewhat together there for the most part. And it makes more sense, and it's easier to pick up, especially as a new player, to figure out, oh, all the things I kind of need to do that sort of function are over in this one area. And I think it also helps that New Halas is one level and not multiple levels with ramps high up in the air.
Yeah, I would agree. But you know what? We're just a couple old fogies with, you know, two-dimensional brains. Maybe these new young whippersnappers can get around without difficulty.
Yes, and I have to apologize. I immediately went to my schoolyard kindergarten-level humor about the names.
And dragged Allie down into the proverbial gutter as well. So, apologize for the giggling,
so,
Sprouts.
Yes.
We did appreciate your letter.
Yes, we did, in more ways than one. So the next email we had was from Brylan of the Guck server. And Brylan writes, have been enjoying the podcast, and the new player project seems to have stirred up quite a lot of interest and feedback. I enjoy those types of segments, even though I am an older player, since seeing new players take an interest in the game really shows how healthy the game still is, and also because as a grizzled old vet, love that term, I occasionally learn something new. There was another podcast I enjoyed listening to. It was an EVE Online podcast called The Drone Bay. They did a new player segment, but they had done it in a different way. One of the hosts was a brand new player to the game, and it made for an interesting dynamic having two older players and one brand new player throughout the shows. Have you given any thought to trying something like this? It certainly would be an interesting dynamic, even if they were only a guest for one or two shows. Keep up the great work. Signed, Brendlin of the Guck server. Yeah, we did certainly, in the last show, I think, get a lot of feedback about our approach to the newbie experience. Folks saying, well, we're not really noobs, and you're getting benefits this way, and you have this back knowledge, and I agree with all that. So it wasn't a perfect vacuum-like experience where we could undo or unring the bell. I think it was a listener had said before. So I think, you know, we did get a lot of feedback, and we certainly appreciate that, and had a good time, and we're going to keep noobing, aren't we?
Yeah, we are, in our own little special way. I agree with Brian, is it Brylan?
Brylan, yeah.
Looks like Brylan to me. That hearing from new people is really encouraging, because it, to me, says that EQ2 isn't just simply maintaining what it has, but drawing in new people. Even if they're on the Freeport server, there are still new people coming to the regular servers as well. So I think that is encouraging. It is difficult, though, to get that, you know, old vet point of view, get rid of that. But I don't know. We are what we are.
Yep.
Grizzled.
Grizzled. I did like that term.
Grizzled and old.
We are both. I think we are both that at times. The next email we have was from Pangafinches from the Venacore server. Hey, love the podcast. I played for 5 years, but quit when I felt the game was being made too easy. I play Lotro, Lord of the Rings Online, now, which is also a free-to-play, so you can't avoid it. What happened to Episode 8? Signed, Pangafinches of Venacore, sent from my iPod. I'm assuming his iPod, not my iPod.
Well, Venacore is gone, isn't it?
Yeah, that was the... Wasn't that the role-play PvP server?
I believe so.
That has already been rolled into the Nagafin server so that there is only one PvP server left.
Wow, you really know your servers, Del.
I do. Thank you. Thank you. To answer his question, what happened to Episode 8? Yes, there is a gap in our release schedule, so we go from Episode 7 to Episode 9, which was the one right before this one. Episode 8, we had done a crossover with the folks from A View from the Top podcast, and we're having just a little bit of a snafu getting that edited and published. As soon as we do get that, we will have it available up on the website for folks to listen to. We had kind of already gone down the path of recording Episode 9. We had that. We didn't want to hold it up any longer, so we released it. And as soon as we do get number 8, we will insert it out there for folks to listen to.
And we did get a lot of people asking about Episode 8, so
mm-hmm.
Pangafinches is one example of the many inquiries, which I guess it's a good thing people are asking about it.
They're staying on top of us, Allie.
Yep, we need help. Our next email is from Care. Care? Care?
From Sounds good.
The Unrest server. This is Care from Unrest. I had several comments to make, but I'll cut them back because I realized that one might be an interesting topic by itself. So he's actually got several bullet points. I thought we could do a little bit of feedback after each one.
All right.
Pretty good podcast. I found it very interesting so far. From way back in the Tinkerfest podcast, Deliverator might not be a real word, but it's a nod to hero protagonist, the Deliverator, the protagonist slash hero of Neal Stephenson's cyberpunk classic Snow Crash. Okay. Hero carries a pair of samurai swords, which he knows how to use, and delivers pizza for the mafia. You do not want to be in the position of arriving after the 30-minute guarantee and making the mafia have to give a refund.
Yes, I didn't know that at all.
I knew none of this. I think that's cool.
I do, too. I think when there's little stuff like that, and especially when I find out about it like after the fact, I think when we also had an email about the two Mythbusters.
Yes, from Domino.
From Domino, yeah, that we hear about kind of after the fact. How about that? Domino and 30 minutes and pizza delivery. Wonder if there's a tie there. Hey.
Hey, look what you did there.
Yeah, more underlying storylines. I think that's really cool because then it goes, oh, yeah, I do remember that. And you kind of smile and think back about it. I like those little what do you call them? Easter eggs.
Easter eggs, yeah. I love it when different people pick up on different things. Like, this is something I never would have known about because I don't follow whatever this genre is. So I think that's cool that there are little things in there for everybody.
Absolutely.
Next bullet point. You should add a link to Domino's blog on your website and maybe give a plug in the show. It's Tradeskill Perspectives at tradeskill.blogspot.com. I think we just did give a plug.
There we go.
Scroll back to June in particular and read about the development of the big red button, which, in fact, I did read. We have one in the Guild Hall, and it's one of the best items in the game. About that, we should add Domino's blog to our website.
We can do that.
Yes. I would like to mention, though, that the Ellie Angle does have Domino's blog on the little blog roll there. So even though Del might be a slacker, Ellie's not. And about the big red button, it is an awesome little item there. I actually have some chat logs of when it was first put into our guild hall of different people, to different people's responses to the button. And then when people knew what it was for, they would try to entice other people to use it. And it's just hilarity ensues.
The big red button actually came up in our guild chat just last night, even, because the guild hall decorator parked it right in front of the Mender bot. So as we're kind of coming back from one raid zone, mendering up to head out to the other one through the rally flag fella, people are accidentally hitting the shiny red button, and that was aggravating certain people.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
I have to ask, though, and the shiny red button is from a Ren and Stimpy skit from a long time ago, or a cartoon. I wonder if the big red button is an ode to the shiny red button that they were trying to get Stimpy to press in one of the cartoon episodes.
Maybe.
If that's another little Easter egg out there.
Maybe. Alrighty, moving on. This question is for Del in particular and leads into the quote-unquote big topic. So I'll end after that. I'm interested to know Del's reaction to finishing the final Druid Ring quest. I assume he's done it. He's working on the Druid Ring construction event, and he collects titles. The final quest was Path of the Prophet, offered by Carista. You stuff Carista the Fae in your backpack and race with her to Emerald Halls, where you meet. Well, that's the point. You receive the title Scion of Growth. Del is an EQ1 old-school player with an interest in lore, so I wonder if his reaction was a lot like mine. Oh my god, that's awesome. And it's probably okay to give away the ending of that quest. It's only a spoiler to a quest that no longer exists, and it's likely to be significant in the future. But I'll leave that for Del to speak to.
Sure. My initial reaction to finishing the Druid Ring event was, thank God, finally. Think on Unrest, as we've said earlier, about being a slacker server. It was down to a half a dozen players or so, and I know, Ali, you were one of them too, who was, for night after night, grinding away those repeatable quests to try to get that finished. I think we did get a little help from some of the calendaring that they may have put on the back end to accelerate it the longer it went so that you got more return per quest on it. So I was happy to get it done because I think at one point we had discussed maybe that we weren't going to finish it in time. The way that the game updates were lining up, we weren't sure if Unrest was going to make it all the way through, and which irked me because I was going to miss out on a quest, of course. The quest itself, though, I kind of would say I spoiled it for myself because I heard other people talking about it on the forums, so I knew what was coming a little bit, but it was still really cool to go through and see and meet those epic characters in person in-game. I did like that. I don't really know, just see it as another NPC. I recognized those characters, took advantage of it, and sat back and said, oh, wow, that's really cool, and took the time to read their dialogue and what they were telling me. So I certainly enjoy that. I do enjoy understanding why I'm doing these quests. Why did I have to run out to Emerald Halls? Why did I have to work on this Druid Ring rebuild? Because it gives me purpose. It gives me a reason to do it. I'm not just doing it for the sake of doing it. I feel like I'm affecting the world of Norrath when I'm doing them. So I find that to be a lot of fun.
So since the quest is gone and you're not spoiling anything for anybody, perhaps you can talk a little bit about what happened.
I gotta be honest, it's been a little while.
Do you know who you met at Emerald Halls?
Yes, didn't we meet the Fionn Urvai?
I believe it was.
Yes. And she, in turn, is now the Avatar of Growth, I believe. I'm remembering this correctly. Please don't run off to Zam and look it up and then tell me how wrong I am, because I am trying to do this from memory. Really should have looked this up before the show, huh? And she gives us the title of Scion of Growth and says that the planes are, you know, the Plane of Growth is being reborn because of all of our work. Am I correct in that remembrance?
Oh, you know, you got me.
Fair enough. And I think that's why Emerald Halls was so important to run to, because that's the home of Wushi and somewhat related to the Plane of Growth, where Tunara lives.
Yeah, my lore is very sparse.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit more knowledgeable in it, but there are people who put me to shame as well out there.
Yeah.
There are some people who really know their stuff called, I remember the gist of it, and I remembered reading it, but I got to be honest, it's been a couple of months now, and I guess when you kill 5,000 Rovlegs, you tend to fill your mind with that.
You're no red shirt guy.
No, that's for sure. Good reference there. I like that one.
Okay, so...
Don't laugh. The red shirt guy is now immortalized in that game. They made an entity out of him.
I saw that. I thought that was very, very cute. Anyway, the big topic is, what do you think of the state of lore in EQ2? In EQ1, I liked the feel of the world and thought that the fantasy setting made for good lore, at least up to Velius. But when it came to trying to read backstories and the adventures of whatever the exploration group at the time was called, my eyes glazed over. It wasn't well written, in my opinion, and it just felt like a cheap way to introduce content. After time with EQ2, I moved to that other game, which was a rich, detailed, well-written history of 10,000 years. New story was consistent with old story, and the lore supported books and manga, as well as that other game. It was as the lore grew less important that the deficiencies in gameplay became an issue, and I came to my senses and returned to EQ2. Now I'm starting to wonder if I've maybe missed the boat when it comes to EverQuest lore by being turned off by the writing style. I don't play the game for its lore content, but I'm starting to see a long, consistent history that goes back to the original release of the Shattered Lands. When the first Voidstorms appeared, I thought it was something the developers had pulled out of a hat, but Farsoon had dealings with the Void. Anashti's soul was hinted at in the first expansion, DOF. KOS introduced the Claymore quests, and they're an integral part of the disturbances in Freeport and Kinos, and the current endgame with Rowan Thier. Thier was mentioned quite some time before he appeared too, if I recall correctly. So I had considered lore to be just a means to anchor interesting zones, but now I'm beginning to suspect that there may be a well-fleshed-out work of fiction behind EQ2 that has so far pretty much evaded me. I'd be very interested in hearing whether you consider EQ2 lore to be important and interesting. I'm also interested in advice on how to learn more of EQ2 lore. I'm familiar with lorelibrary.com, which is a great resource, but as a collection of books, it's hard to read it as part of a story. If anyone has collected guides to timelines and storylines, I'd really like to know where to find them. Keep up the good work. Signed, Care. Plus 12 or so alts. So that is a big topic. Do you want to start with Del's point of view?
Sure, absolutely. Here's my take. I think that, as he suggests, that the lore of EQ2 is not just some random collection of stories that they've kind of glued together with rubber bands and bubble gum and shoestring, but there is a story arc underneath it all, and it does tie. And I'm always fascinated, and I've said this in the past, when I'm going into Raider Zone, why am I raiding this thing? Why is Rowan Thier involved in this? Why is he called this? What's his purpose here? I'm just not killing him for killing's sake. Though I'm killing him to get his fat loot, there is a reason why, and he's part of the story, and the quest that you go on. Who is Paracelsus, and who is Tox, all these kind of mobs that are at the end of zones. There is a story that kind of leads up to them and does bind them all together a little bit. I will say, though, I do think it can be confusing and difficult to get that story and put it all together. But I think for at least myself, that is some of what's fun about it. Is that as I'm encountering these stories, I am myself stitching them back together a little bit. I didn't read it like an encyclopedia. I didn't start at chapter one and read through the book and get to the end and say, okay, here's the end story. I had to take all these bits and pieces in these different units and plug them all together to create the story arc for myself. So I think that is fun, that there necessarily isn't published to players a complete, this is the story of the Sentinel's fate. And here's where it begins and here's where it ends. Because there are a lot of places where that story diverges and then re-merges with itself. Sometimes it shoots off onto a side story that has nothing to do with the major story, but it's kind of interesting in itself. But then it may or it may not come back in. And I like figuring that out for myself. I think if there was just this giant website with all the answers, then it might not be as fun or as interesting. But I certainly do enjoy it. And I do think it's more than just a bunch of random things that they glued together. Like you talked about the void a little bit. You're right. You look at the void and you go, where did all this come from? Then you're like, well, wait a minute. There was Varsoon. And there was the stuff in Enchanted Lands and Rivervale. There is more to this than just this. They pulled this alien storyline out of their butts. Mm-hmm. It's kind of been hinted out there. Now they are fleshing out that storyline. So I think that stuff is really good. And I do enjoy it. And I find it to be a lot of fun.
I would agree. I think that last week when I was researching the questions for the Are You Smarter segment.
Yep.
Stumbled across some good places for lore, one of which is the forums on the EQ2, the SOE forums. There's a lore section there. There's some extremely knowledgeable people, and they just talk about things. Somebody will post a question about some little piece of lore connection to some other thing, and you'll see a whole bunch of replies to that, and you can learn a lot that way. And you'll quickly find out who has a lot of knowledge and information. One thing I noticed is that going through the game, you're right, it's not a linear storyline. It seems like there is this whole world underneath, and you just scratch off the top a little bit, and you get a little peek here and there, which is maybe, I think, what makes it so real or so something you can really connect with, because that's kind of how you get to know people. When you get to know somebody, you don't find out where they were born, when, and hear their whole life story from infancy to now before you have a conversation. So, I mean, that's sort of how we get to know each other, little by little, piece by piece, and you learn more about each other every time you interact. And I feel sort of like the lore in EQ2, for me anyway, because I didn't have the EQ1 experience, you get to know the characters in the same way you get to know people, sort of little by little. And that's kind of what makes it intriguing.
Yeah, I'm always waiting to find out what the next, and I use the term loosely, chapter is. I don't almost want the Wikipedia version of Toxulia. You know, I don't want that. I don't want to start at the beginning and read to the end like it's some type of biography. I kind of want to have the onion, peel back little layers of it all the time and learn a little bit more. I think if I read it all at once, okay, yeah, I got it all, then I'd move on to the next one. But I think you unearth these little stories and tales, and they weave a tapestry that all goes together. It's not a bunch of encyclopedia chapters of the world. And that's, like you say, Allie, not how you learn about the world or life.
And I think one good way, if you really want to learn about lore, and I personally would like to do that, there's so much there. It's like little mysteries all woven together. But one way to do it is to pick something that you're interested in and research it. Say, for example, Varsoon. What's his story? You want to know where he came up first? Who he's related to? What's all going on? Just look up Varsoon on the lore forums and go from there. Another thing is, and Del actually can be credited with pointing this out to me, is there is a little thing called the EverQuest Atlas, which I found on Amazon for $5, by the way, used. And there are a number, it's huge, first of all, but it's from EverQuest. Basically, it goes through all the zones, but it gives you a lot of background on a lot of the characters that you encounter and the story from EQ and EQ2, they do connect. I mean, they may not be identical, but they do connect.
Yeah, I think we talked about, what was it, D'Artagnan and Master Yalil and all the stuff in Otis and Peniel that came from that book ties very well into what we see here in EverQuest 2. Why is this raid mob called Master Yalil? Well, you learn that if you know that whole story of the heretics and Arudin and the hole and all that sort of stuff. So it does bind it together. Again, we didn't find that all in one place, in one chapter or one book. You take that, you take those, you know, what's it, a page or two story from that. You find a page or two in the lore sections on the forums. And the signature quests, which is real lore, where a lot of this storyline is kind of fleshed out a little bit. If you go through all that, you do learn it all. I think the key is, Allie, sometimes a lot of players don't read NPC dialogue, and right, there is a wealth of information out there. They tell you why they're making you do this quest and what's the reason, especially for these non-Kill 10 Rat type quests, the signature quests. They explain what's really going on in Otis. So I think that's a great way to get a lot of the information. And I think, Allie, like you say, it made me think of something a long time ago, doing the research on your own. There was a fellow a long time ago in EverQuest 2 who researched all the sunken ships in EverQuest 2. Like, he found all the shipwrecks and wrote them all down. I don't know if that thread is still out there in the forum somewhere, but even developers were chiming in about some of the stories behind some of those boats and the names and all that sort of stuff. It's probably a little dated because it was a few years ago now, but it was this great wealth. I mean, you're just reading it. Oh, I remember that, and I remember the reference to that or that in that zone and that story and all that sort of stuff. So the information's out there. I think pick a topic that you're really interested in and just start diving around in it. Google around for it, and you'll find a lot of it out there. Dragons is my personal favorites.
I love dragons. But who doesn't love dragons?
I don't know, but there is a wealth of dragon lore. Just if you just focused on those characters themselves, there is a tremendous amount of information out there. I've always wanted to, and I say I want to, but I've never put pen to paper to do it. I've always wanted to try to build a family tree of all the dragons and put them all together.
Yeah.
So lore to me, very important in game, and because it does tie it all together. These aren't just random zones plugged together by connection points. There is a reason why zones and the NPCs in them and the monsters that you kill in them, there is a reason behind it, and there is a story, and I do enjoy that story myself.
Well, thank you, Kara, for that wonderful letter and the big topic.
The next email is from Okabia. Okabia writes us. Says, "Hi, Del and Allie. I've been enjoying your podcast immensely, and my only criticism, gasp, is that they aren't frequent enough. Phew. You had sent me, Okabia, Ajia from Najina, some station cash for being your first listener email, and I have been hoarding it because I couldn't decide what to spend it on. Now I know. I'm going to get a new character with it. I haven't quite decided what to create, and I'm open to suggestion, but I've decided to wait until the server merge when we become neighbors. While I'll miss the only server I've ever known, I'm looking forward to meeting Allie and Del face-to-face, so to speak. I especially can't wait to see if Del's house is ... creatively decorated ... as I've heard. Eep. Speaking of server merges, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the subject. I'm thinking that Unrest may be more populated than Najina, and I wonder if you're looking forward to the extra people. Signed, Okabia, from Najina, for now." I have to say, she writes us several other times. We're going to read those next, but just a couple of quick comments on this. Okabia, Allie, I will always remember she was our first, and you always remember your first.
Oh, God, why do you have to do that?
And I don't want to set any high expectations about my in-game house.
I don't think anyone has high expectations at all.
Of my in-game house? Good.
Yeah, I think it's well known that you just dump your stuff on the floor. Pay the rent as few times as possible.
Actually, now I've gotten into the habit of dumping it into the moving crate because I can do that.
Ah, how convenient. Well, let's move on to the next letter because there's more. A little about mercenaries. I should have waited until I listened to the last podcast before I sent my earlier email, but here I go again. I just wanted to add something to the talk about mercenaries and how they're kind of counterintuitive to the MMO concept. I used to play Guild Wars and made extensive use of the mercenaries that were available. And the reason was that grouping was, and still is, hard for me. But I like to do the harder content. I have a job in IT that requires me to be on call every other week. When I'm on call, I don't like to group with anyone because I could get paged at any time to take care of a problem, and I don't want to have to bail in a group halfway through a mission. When the mercenaries became available, it allowed me to start out, and if I got paged, I could just park my group off to the side and pick up on things when I was available again. It isn't the best solution, but it definitely helped me out, especially because the weeks I'm on call are actually my best gaming opportunities, because I can't really go anywhere on those days. In EQ2, when I'm on call, I can do some harvesting, trade skilling, decorating, or just other solo-type content. That's one of the best things about EQ2, and you've addressed it before, the versatility. And I'll just add that sometimes the mercenaries in GW were more trouble than they were worth. Signed, Ukubia. From Najina. Yeah, I think that concept that we talked about last time, you can hire people to sort of fill in your group to do harder content when you are having difficulty finding a group. I think that concept is ideal for that scenario that you're talking about there of not really being able to fit in your gameplay with your life in terms of, you know, on the game's terms. Rather, you want it to be gaming on your terms, which I think is the only thing that makes sense these days. But I guess there is a sort of double-edged sword, because on the one hand, you're helping people who can't otherwise play your game or play your content because of life reasons or whatever. But on the other hand, you are maybe taking out or giving, I should say, maybe you're giving a solution that isn't the ideal solution. Like the ideal solution, I think, would be to have content enough for every play style and have population enough for every play style, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it does. And I think EQ2 has done a good job of that. There is solo content. There is heroic content. There is raid level content. And even within the raiding content, there's multiple tiers of it. You got your times two and your times four. Okubia makes a good comment. And I think when you look at EverQuest as a game, and I don't know what the exact numbers are, what is the average age of players who are playing the game? I think it's no longer the proverbial 18-year-old living in his mom's basement. You right. have an older players, you know, players who are like us, who may have played EverQuest 1 back in the day when we were 18 and living in our mom's basements, but now we have moved on to different stations in life. We're older, we have homes, we have families, we have jobs, and much like Okubia suggests, jobs where you might have to be on call and respond to things like that, or you have small children. There are distractions for when you're playing an MMO and you're grouped with, you know, five other friends or five other folks online. You can't say, oh, hold on, I got to change a dirty diaper, or work's calling, there's a server down or something like that. These people are dependent on you to be focused on the game and playing that, especially if you're a healer or the tank or something like that, where it's a one-of type of situation sometimes. So that can be a challenge, because you want to play all that heroic content and raid-level content, but you also have these other real-life commitments. So I think as a vendor for SOE, that's a challenge to make content that everybody can play, and I do think they've done a good job of that. It's just we as players, we want to consume all the content, but sometimes real life can get in the way. Mercenaries are a solution to that, but they can be counterintuitive to wanting people to group together, because now you can play solo on group level mechanics and content like that. It's a fine balance, and it's a tough one. And I'm sure, yeah, even as Okubia suggests, sometimes the technology doesn't work, where your tank just runs off and starts pulling the whole zone if your tank's the NPC character.
Oi. Wouldn't like that.
No, certainly not. But so it's a challenge. You know, you want an MMO which is massively multiplayer, but you want to be able to have folks who are older in life and have other things, other commitments that don't permit them to sit in a in their computer room chair for 6 hours, 8 hours playing a game like that.
Mm-hmm. It's a balancing act.
Yep.
It's a good thing we're not in charge, Del.
That is true. So we do have another email here, and this one is also from Ukabia, and it says, okay, I really, really should have waited and listened to the whole podcast before writing, because I've listened to a bit more about the server merge, and now I'm nervous. I'll try to avoid undercutting Dell on the broker, and I promise not to take his stuff. And by stuff, I'm thinking shinies. I guess I've always been on Agena, and my only exposure to Unrest is listening to your podcast. I see Unrest as this huge Uber rating server, and that you might look at us, and by us I mean me, as a silly noob. I have never, ever been on a raid. Okabia, the one and only, and Aggie, the only one on Najina and Unrest, phew. Kind of nervously wringing my hands over the merger.
Oh, boy. Well, first of all, Unrest is not a huge Uber rating server. So never fear. I think the worst thing you have to fear is maybe level chat. There are some characters out there who are...
characters, to say the least.
Yeah, let's just say that.
Let's leave it at that. But I think that goes on. That's par for the course for every server. I'm sure every server has its characters. And I think that's a little bit what I was talking about the other week when I said, well, now we're going to have these new characters that we're going to have to interact with and kind of that feel-out period. Yes, Okabia, keep your hands off my stuff unless you're buying it off the broker, which I please invite you to do. If you need Drovelag brains, I have a whole ton of them.
Brains?
More than enough to supply all of both Unrest and Agena, I hope. And they're only 75 silver right now. Until somebody makes theirs 50 silver, then mine will be 49 silver.
Aren't you going with half price this week?
No, I'm not station cash. Oops, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that out loud. So,
and as for being a silly noob, we're all silly noobs, so don't worry about it.
You'll fit right in.
Yeah.
Not everybody on Unrest raids. I would say, actually, I think there's a fair population that is raiding, and it's funny. I've looked at the Flames website and looked at the new recruitment threads for Najina / Unrest section, and I have to say there appear to me, now this is my opinion, there are more Najina server guilds who are doing more of the content than on Unrest.
Yeah.
So I would almost say to Okabia, I think it's the reverse. I'm looking at Najina as the all-powerful server compared to Unrest.
Well, and also you're talking about if Dell and Allie are your examples of people on Unrest, it's probably not, we're not necessarily representative, shall we say, of the server. We both happen to raid, but I wouldn't say that we're Uber by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, speak for yourself.
I've seen the server's full of pickup groups, people who just grind pickup instances. I wouldn't have the first clue. There are zones I haven't even been in. I wouldn't have the first clue how to like turn and burn a zone. So I pretty much steer clear of pickup groups not because I fear a crappy group, but I fear being the crappy pickup and getting a bad name. So I kind of stay away from those because I don't want to embarrass myself. So, I mean, there are all kinds of people, and I think it's just people. We're just people who play EQ2.
But if you touch my stuff, I kill you. So okay, keep your Francis. Hands off my shinies. All right, Francis. Yes, I think, Al, you're right. I don't think Unrest is any different from Najina, from Guck, or Miss Moore, or Butcher Block, all the servers are the same at a macro level.
Well, Guck might be a little special, but everybody else is fine.
Everybody else, and I think the merger will be fine. There'll be a little bit of a feeling out period.
Yeah, I think so. We'll all be one big happy family pretty soon. We'll be having Thanksgiving dinner together.
Shiny happy tunes holding hands.
Yeah. All right, we did have one last letter from Metcroft, the Metromancer. I'm just kidding.
Oh, that's right. I screwed that up last time, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. Hey, guys, I've caught up on your podcast, and you guys are definitely helpful during my long commute to work. Thanks. I'm a relatively new player to EQ2, and something struck me this morning in podcast number 7. you guys were talking about the wall, and I wanted to make a couple of points. Now, I want to highlight this part.
Okay.
Allie might be right.
That's not how it appears on my sheet.
It's in large capital letters, and it's underlined, and it's highlighted, and it's got stars all around it, and squiggly lines and arrows. I would in fact just simply erase the might be part.
I was just going to say, it says might be. It doesn't say you are.
Oh, no. I am.
Read the letter.
You guys were talking about the wall and that you might not hit one till late in your leveling process. That might be true. Remember, though, noobs will not, I repeat, not be grouping and with someone during all these areas. I know you guys mention it, but you guys seem to have glossed over that point. Most players will not be running with a group, and in most cases won't even have a guild to attempt to group with. I would like to point out that I did actually re-listen to that show, and I had some second thoughts, which I posted on my blog, which you can find at eq2talk.com.
What a plug.
Sorry.
Shameless.
Point number two. I followed most of the Golden Path with my level 72 Warlock starting in New Hallis. I hit two walls that I can think of while soloing. Key word there, guys. Soloing. One was the Goblin Islands in Butcherblock, which, by the way, side note here from Del and Allie, that's where we died the first time. I died a ton on that GD island. I forget the quests that sent me out there, but I certainly remember being frustrated with that part. I also hit a wall in Tenebrous Tangle. I think it was one of the remote islands that had some heroic mobs on it. Sorry, I can't remember which, but I found myself dying there a lot too. So I disagree that there aren't the walls that you make that make you learn your class, but this is assuming that you are playing alone. I'm sure with a tank or some other class, perhaps a healer, I would have rolled through those areas. So remember to take this into consideration as you show your noobs along the way. Keep up the good work. Signed, Metcroft, the Warlock, and Metromancer, the Necro, from the Crushbone server with the Knights of Mar Guild. P.S. Del, I'm a New England boy as well, and how about the Celtics?
Yes, how about them Celtics? I think Metrocroft here sent us the email the day after the Celtics beat the Miami Heat in the NBA season opener. And yes, that was a good day to see our Big Three beat the new Big Three and kind of put them in their place.
Mm.
And we talked about this, Allie, kind of off-air when we weren't doing the show. I think we might have each had different definitions of what the wall was.
Yes, we did talk about this after the show.
So I thought maybe we could just take a moment and each kind of replay that conversation about what you consider the wall to be and what I considered the wall to be. Because I think even though we were kind of talking about the same sort of thing, we had different definitions and therefore kind of different parameters as to what was going to constitute the wall.
Yes.
So what was your definition of the wall?
Okay, well, for me, the wall is the point at which you have played your character after reading your spells and combat arts in-game and just going with instinct, going with what you, the tools at your disposal within yourself and your mind and your tune and what's been laid out in front of you. You have reached a certain point past which you simply cannot go. You have maximized to the best of your ability without outside assistance, and you have reached this point where you can't go any further. You find yourself not doing enough damage, not being able to outlive the mob, not being able to finish a fight, or just barely being able to finish a fight to the point where you just want to cry and tear your hair out. That wall propels you to either give up or, let's hope, something different. Go do some research. Talk to people who play that class. Read websites. Investigate further what you can, how you can eke out just a little bit more damage or stay alive longer, that sort of thing. So the wall for me is a place that you reach after you have maximized your own personal abilities where you have to now go outside of your own knowledge base and gain more information.
My interpretation of what the wall was is that it's the point where you can no longer, as your tune, run up and just hit your auto attack and just mash some nuke keys, where that is no longer successful. You might still win, you might survive, but it's not going to be as easy as it was on the newbie island, where you just ran around, bonked things, and they pretty much fell over dead, where everything was down arrow and everything just kind of flopped over from a few nukes, where you really had to all of a sudden pause and say, I just can't, I have to kill 8 goblins or something. I can't just swim over to that island, pick the first 8 goblins I see, and just start killing them ad nauseum. And I don't have to worry about what's behind me or what's around me or if that mob was linked with other mobs or that sort of stuff. Where I think I think that transition from what life was like for us in Frostfang Sea, where we could kind of do just that, be it solo or grouped, I think it kind of, for the most part, worked the same outcome for us. And when we reached Butcher Block, where all of a sudden it did send us out to that, as Metcroft says, that GD Goblin Island. And you just can't swim over there and grab the first goblins that you see and just yank them and start spanking them.
Uh-huh.
That there's a little bit more to it. So to me, that was that wall where you could no longer play like a noob day one. Run, auto attack, nuke, and be done with it.
Okay, so we basically, what we're saying here is we had two different definitions of the wall. But I do agree that those are both points that can slow you down. I wouldn't call Dell's concept a wall. Like I said before, I would call that more of a gate.
Yes.
Because all you have to do is read your spells. All you have to do is pay a little more attention. You can't just jump in and do whatever. You have to actually understand a little bit of something.
Yeah, I would say my wall was maybe a half wall. It's going to be it would be easier to overcome the wall that I'm suggesting, and your wall is much steeper, much higher, much more difficult to overcome. It's not just going to, you're not going to be able to overcome the wall that you're referring to just by mousing over your spells and reading them.
Right. I'm more talking about once you already know your character. You're talking more about, I'm just jumping into the game.
Yeah.
You're talking about not even before you even learn about your class. I'm talking about after you learn about your class, after you use the tooltips and whatever's in game.
I think conceptually we were coming from the same place. It was just the degree of where we put that on the spectrum.
Yeah. However, I would like to point out in Metcroft's letter, he talks about how he's pretty adamant about people do not group in the early parts. I think that's accurate, but I wouldn't go so far as to say people don't absolutely group. Not everybody is the same. I think there are people who play this game together. I think maybe couples will start a game together. Friends will start a game together. You know, you never know. But I think by and large, people don't group in the early parts, and primarily people solo. So I think he brings up a good point that we do need to keep that in mind. What we're doing, I wouldn't necessarily consider grouping because there's only two of us and we're not really, you know, we're not a tank and a healer.
We're not very complementary to each other.
Right.
Both in our tunes and our personalities.
Yeah, you could say that again. But I do think I don't know if it was this listener or someone else who brought up that we seem to be power leveling. I wouldn't say we're power leveling. Power leveling implies, you know, you're simply banging on things to get the XP really quick. We're not doing that. We're actually reading the quest. We just happen to be going along faster maybe because, first of all, there's two of us. So we don't have to sit and rest. You know, we can sort of bang out mobs more quickly and bang out quests more quickly because there are two of us. So I wouldn't call it power leveling per se, but it's not an accurate representation. I'll give them that.
Yeah, and I had received a tell in game, and I apologize, I don't remember the person's name. What they were saying was they were following up on something we had mentioned during one of our previous shows. somebody was saying that they weren't sure how we got to where we were on Frostfang Seas at that level, that they weren't anywhere close to that. And the person who had made that comment was an EQ2 extended player. And somebody had sent me a tell saying, by the way, just in case you didn't know, and I'll be honest, I certainly didn't know this, that on EQ2 extended, folks are, their slider bar are locked so that they are 50% AA, 50% traditional experience. Both of us are playing 100% to traditional experience.
Right. So okay, well.
We are, in that case, I wouldn't call that power leveling. We are just distributing our experience more to levels than we are to AAs, which might give us an advantage of being higher level than some of the other folks who are playing along with us are as well.
Right, and also that's sort of normal to us because that's what we know, because we grew up on a normal server.
Correct.
Or what at the time was the only type of server. So,
but I just thought that was a little bit of interesting information as well as something that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, I wasn't either. Very interesting. Makes you want to switch to a live server, doesn't it? Come on over, guys. Isn't that the whole point of EQ2X, to get more lives, to get more subscriptions? Come on, more subscriptions. Come on, guys. You don't want to play this free-to-play thing. You want to move your bar, don't you? Yeah, you do.
You want to come over to Unrest, where you can buy the cheapest Yahali hand you can find on the market. So we also wanted to talk a bit about contested mobs. A little bit of background on that. Last year, around this time, the Knights of the Dead time, they introduced the Headless Horseman x2 contested mob, which had some very nice items on him. And there seemed to be a lot of backlash from the player community saying that there shouldn't be contested mobs that are only around for a short amount of time, and they shouldn't be tied to live events. That live events are more for everybody to take part in, and that content shouldn't exclude players who aren't able to get to it, especially around live events. This year, the Headless Horseman gets a little bit of a revamp so that he's now end game tier now. And I was surprised this year that there wasn't the same amount of backlash. Maybe people got it all out of their systems last year about the contested mob being tied to the live event Night of the Dead. So Allie and I were discussing contested mobs. Are they good or are they bad for the game?
Well, I have a couple of thoughts, but first I wanted to say I was not aware of said backlash, and I think maybe this is just an observation. You didn't hear quite as much backlash this year because you stopped hanging around with all those role players. Maybe because you're back into the real world. I know, I'm going to get shot. Okay, let me just stop that while I'm ahead. So I do have a couple thoughts. One is about contested mobs during live events, and the other is about contested mobs in general. So my first thought is about contested mobs during live events. My thought is, why not? There's something for everybody in the live events. I think it's really great to have something that people who are competitive or who do that sort of thing on a regular basis, that there's a little something to draw them to the live event other than quests and collections and lore and things that they maybe aren't up their alley, but there is something up their alley, which is a contested mob. That's great to include. You're being more inclusive of that population if you give them a contested mob. So there's that. If you're not into it, you don't do it. Not everything is for everybody. I mean, I personally, I'd love to be able to wear a size 4 bikini, but that's not going to happen in this lifetime, right? But does that mean that if I can't wear a size 4 bikini, that nobody should be able to wear one? Because it's not fair? I don't think so. So that's my first thought. What do you think about contested mobs during live events specifically?
I think they're a good thing. I like it because, as you suggest, it is content for more people. And the more content that there is out there, the better off things are. Not everything appeals to everybody, and it doesn't have to appeal to everybody. But it does appeal to some, so sure, why not? Much like shinies, not everybody is into shinies the way other people are. But I don't think people complain about it. I think raid mobs kind of stick out because they are at one end of the spectrum in terms of gameplay spectrum. So I think they're an easy target for things, but I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Heck, I'd like to see more of them for more live events. I think Night of the Dead is the only one where we do see it. I'd like to see them in other live events as well, or just other events in general.
And also, I have to point out that there are guide quests that are based around roleplay. I don't see any raiders complaining about these guide events, excluding them because they're about roleplay, and they don't have an interest, so...
Yeah, I think too. Remember back in the day when Kingdom of Sky launched and you worked to build the spires, and once the spires were built, down came a dragon times four, and it was engageable at that point. Well, there was a lot of backlash over, you know, who got to fight it and who didn't. It was a one-time spawn. You know what? My opinion, contested is just that. And this maybe gets a little bit out of live event contested and into general contested, but all's fair in love, war, and contested. You pull it, you kill it, you own it. It's as simple as that. First come, first serve. And that's part of the gameplay. And you know what? A little bit, I like that.
I do like that. Even though I probably won't be able to participate in it. And in fact, that Spire thing, I was at work. What happened? No, was it the dragon?
You're maybe thinking of the Griffin Towers that got built very
quickly.
Griffin
Towers. Yeah, that got built while I was at work, and by the time I got home, they were done. That was the first one, so I was kind of bummed about it, but I didn't, you know, go light my torches and, you know, wield pitchforks, but some people certainly did. But the dragon thing during the Spire event, even if I was online at the time, I wasn't in a guild that could be organized and go tackle it. I think that there are people who excel at, you know, organizing people and sort of being prepared for that sort of a thing, you know, and it gives them something challenging to do. And yes, it excludes, I think, the vast majority of people. You're giving something to those upper echelon people who actually excel at that. Who make that their one thing that they do well.
Much like you say in real life, I'm not going to fit into a size 4 bikini either. But that's okay. Life isn't always fair. And I think, you know, maybe a little bit as we, you know, kind of drift into general contested a little bit as well. As a player, yes, I pay my $15.99 a month or whatever it is. But I'm entitled to everything. But I realize that does not mean I have automatic entitlement to everything. That this is the way the game is set up, and I can choose to play that way if I want. Maybe I can't, maybe I don't want to, but that's okay. I think a lot of players have this, I pay my $15 a month, so I should be able to get access to everything and do everything and have everything all the time. And that's not the way MMOs are set up. If you want that, I think you should go play a console game, really, or another style of game. In this game, there is a little bit of the haves and the have-nots, and that's okay. I'm not an all-have either, but I'm okay with that. I get, dang, I would really like that sort of thing. Or, oh, wow, that drop's really awesome. I wish I had gotten in on that. But if I don't, life is going to go on. I might be grumpy over it for a little while, but I'll get over it.
Well, and if you wanted to, you could set yourself up to do that. You just have to work at it.
Exactly. Last year, I did get into a Headless Horseman spawn, only because I happened to sign on 5 minutes before I had to leave for work and was checking the broker, and somebody said, hey, he's up. Do you want to kill him? And I'm like, we got to do it now. I have to go to work. And they said, yep, we're pulling now. I went over and I got in on a kill. This year, I haven't gone over at all. nor have I seen people shouting that he's up.
I haven't ever killed him.
Yeah.
Never even seen him.
Are you okay with that, though?
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with the fact that I haven't done it because I haven't really made an effort to do it. If I, you know, did a shout in guild chat and said, hey, let's get organized. You guys want to, and if I took that upon myself to organize something and then didn't get it because the servers came down or something, you know, then I'd be maybe a little grumpy. But, you know, let's face it, I haven't put in the effort to go do that or even gone over there to see if there's a pickup to get into or anything. So, you know, I'm okay with that.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's put it in this type of context. He spawns, right? You see him, and I see him. We're in two different guilds. We start mustering our forces in each our own guild. You have 11 people there, or say you've got 11, and I've got 10, right? And I pull them while you're standing there waiting for your last guy to show up, and my guild kills him.
Mm-hmm.
Are you angry?
I wouldn't say angry. Would I be frustrated? Sure. But that's sort of part of the game. I mean, and that's part of strategy. Move fast, pull first, and live.
Well, yes, and that third piece is key, too, because if we don't, then you get to pull them. But
exactly.
Hey, and I look at it kind of the same way, Allie. My group, and this is just a fictitious story. I'm making it all up, but not that it didn't happen. My group got there first in force with enough force that I thought we could handle it. We pulled it. And that's our prerogative.
Exactly.
And that's kind of that's the way contested are set up.
Right.
First come, first serve, first enforce. If you can handle it, pull it.
Exactly.
If we wipe, then it's up. Then you can. Then my opinion is, I don't believe, and let me ask you about this. I don't believe in the that team should get a second crack at it.
Because they camped it? No, absolutely. Right. Too bad.
When we pulled it because we had enough force that I believed to kill it with. If we wipe, it's open game, and you shouldn't have to give us any second chances.
That's right, because if you made a bad judgment call, that's part of strategy too.
Right, I could have waited for more players, I could have waited for different classes, I could have waited for more better tunes or something like that to sign on. I made the choice to go when I thought we could win. What I don't think, though, is cool, what I would say, is as long as the game doesn't despawn him,
yeah,
he should stay there. We pulled, we wiped, he should stay there. That way we're not blocking you from getting at it. Just, you know, I'll run up and engage him and block him solo so that nobody else can have him. I don't believe in that. But if you wipe, it's up to the next group. That's the next first and force group who's ready gets a crack at him.
I agree. Live events, because it is a short-term event. So does this change your opinion in any way about the contested aspect? I mean, do you feel that because it's a live event, it's a holiday, it's a whatever you want to call it, this type of thing has no place in that? Is that where the complaints came from? I guess I'm a little fuzzy on that whole.
Yeah, I think so. I think because live events up until last year when this first kind of came out were always the content was designed at level, or anybody could do it at any level. And all of a sudden now, there was this component to a live holiday event that was more difficult, that not everybody who wanted to do it could do it without the work that we kind of talked about. You needed more people. In the past, every holiday event had pretty much been solo quests with down arrow mobs, and in very safe areas to do.
Now, shiny, happy people and fuzzy, cute bunnies.
Yeah, kind of. That's a little bit of an exaggeration, but yeah, kind of.
Hey, if I'm good for, I'm good for exaggeration, right?
That's all fair and love for broker pricing. So I think a lot of people had this, you know, it should be that. This is what Frostfell was. This is what E-Releasey Day is. This is what Knights of the Dead in the past had been. Now, all of a sudden, contested and epic were involved. And I think that's just rocked the boat a little bit, that people were, hey, this isn't what it had always been. And I want in on all the live event because it's a holiday event. I've been able to do all the holiday event in the past if I want. Even if I'm a level one tune, I should be able to do it.
Right, who moved my cheese?
right. So I think that's where some of the frustration level for some players came. And I looked at it as, hey, it is what it is. You can go out there and get it if you want. You might have to work hard at it to get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, this sort of reminds me a little bit of the fanfare, not this past year, but the year before, so 2009 in Vegas.
Yes.
There was a, I don't remember which panel it was, but there was a person who got up and asked for, it was, I believe, either a role play or somebody was a lore junkie or a book collector or something like that, who basically got up and said they wanted the Chalcedon Stone, which you get from killing Trachodon.
Correct. I do remember this.
That quest, the quest reward. They wanted to be able to have that because it's a house item or because of the lore. I don't remember what the reason was, but they didn't want to have to kill Trachodon or get all the access to be able to get in to see Trachodon, into Trachodon's lair. You know, they didn't want to have to do that whole quest series because it's too hard. Like, isn't there something we can do for crafters or for whoever to be able to just walk in and click the thing and get the Chalcedon Stone?
I do remember that, and I believe their response was?
Hell no. Well, maybe not quite, but...
It was a very polite no.
Right. But I think a lot of heads turned in the room, sort of like, you want what?
Well, I think too what also caused people's head to turn was the person's argument as to why it would be an acceptable change. And
but
they referenced... They referenced the Lord of the Rings movie saying, well, if two halflings can take the Ring of Power and walk across Mordor and throw it into the volcano, well, then why can't my halfling walk into Trachodon's lair and click on something and get the Chalcedon Stone? Which I think caused the room to even become more unpolite in their no response. But I think you're right. Not everything in-game has to be designed for everybody. I think the team has done in the past a good job of making a lot of content available to everybody, especially with the live events. But it doesn't mean that every event has to be exclusively available to everybody. I think, this is Delmon's opinion, I think there is a little bit of too much, I'm entitled to it.
I agree.
And I think that's bad.
I agree. I think that you're not entitled to anything just because you're buying a subscription or logging in. I think you're only entitled to that which you're willing to work for, be it either walking around and talking to all these NPCs to finish a quest, harvesting for hours upon end to be able to get rares and raws, killing thousands upon thousands of Drolvargs to get, you know, however many parts, you know, to sell on the broker and undercut the entire server. You know, you spent the time to do those things. You should be rewarded for that. It shouldn't just simply fall on your lap because you snap your fingers and say, I want it.
You're right. To me, the reward was the achievement and the title, and I have those. And I'm proud to display them. I always remember back to my very first days in EverQuest 1. We were in the Kellithon Wood. And this big, huge guy, at that time I didn't know there was such a thing as barbarians, came by, and he was a shaman, I believe, because he had the kilt on, and he had the big, tall guy, and he had the polar bear helmet on, and I was just in awe of this guy. And I think some of that awe has gone away, because I'm no longer impressed by accomplishments in-game, because everybody can accomplish them. I'm impressed when I see somebody walking around with one of those titles from those Kingdom of Sky days, because, wow, there were four of them, maybe, and I don't remember exactly. Four dragons came down, so that meant there's 4 times 24 people on the server who got titles from that event. I'm impressed by that. Wow, that is cool. Congratulations, you did the work for that. Or, heck, if I see somebody walking around with Destroyer of Setar over their head, wow, props to you. There's not a whole heck of a lot of them in-game. You must have worked very hard to kill them. I'm impressed by accomplishment. And I think some of that comes with this contested stuff. I'm impressed when somebody camps and works hard to earn something in-game. I like to look at them and say, wow, that's really cool. Congratulations on your work, your effort. or when I hear about people working on contested mobs, because I know there's a bit of competition and looking over your shoulder and camping it and trying to figure it out as fast as possible to be able to win. I am impressed by that, and I like to be impressed by that. I'd like to see more of that sort of stuff in-game. So I do believe that entitlement has taken away a little bit from that because everybody can do it.
I did think, have another thought about contested mobs in general. And we sort of touched on this in a discussion that we had offline. In general, I think we need more contested mobs. And specifically, I feel like we need more accessible contested mobs, more mid-level content contested mobs. I mean, you see the big hard mode. Well, there's, I guess, easy mode versions, or I should say normal versus challenge mode. There are those times for current tier raid mobs that are contested. But there are, I think, only a smattering of people at the higher end that can do those. I think that's great. I think it's great to have those. But I think it would be great to have something in the mid-range as well. We used to see a lot more of the sort of mid-range, doable, I'd like to call them, contested mobs. Like, I'm thinking of there are a couple in Khunzar Jungle. There was one, was it a dragon, I think, up on the cliffs there in one part, up by the City of Mist.
Yes.
That was not always up. We went after it a couple of times, and it was really exciting because, you know, it was sort of whoever's on at the time, somebody stumbles, oh, look, this dragon is up. Does anybody want to go after it? Well, if you have enough people, you head out there. You try and take it on. Well, maybe there's another group. And in fact, when we went, one of the times I remember, we had a pretty good force on their way, but there was another group forming down at the bottom of the cliff. And as I recall, the person, one of the people in there is somebody that we recognized from level chat, from one of the bigger, harder core guilds. But they were gathering, and it was a bunch of different guilds, people from different guilds. So it seemed more like a pickup or maybe friends of friends type of thing. And it was, you know, it was sort of like, you know, exciting. Who's going to pull first? Who's going to be first in force, as you say? And we ended up trying to pull it because we didn't want to lose it. And we ended up wiping because we had no strategy. Well, then they came in and pulled it. And they couldn't hold it either. I don't know if they wiped or if they just, some of them petered off or whatever. So we ended up getting to pull it again. And it was pretty exciting. It was a lot of back and forth. And you know what? Even though we're in competition with each other, there was a sense of community there. Because here you are interacting with other people. Even if you're not chatting with them in friendly conversation, you're interacting with people on the server. There's a sense of camaraderie. And I feel like, even though you're against each other, I feel like maybe we've reached a point where that camaraderie or that community has sort of petered off a little bit.
It's interesting you say that, because I think you're right. I didn't necessarily think of that right off, was that some of this competition does build community. It builds replay because you want to come back. You keep trying it. And you know who the competition is. You're always sizing them up. Now, you may not be drinking buddies, but you know who they are, and they are part of your community because of that. So maybe a lack of some of that does hurt the community a little bit. And even as a person not actually engaged, and if we think back to the avatars business, my guild certainly was not engaged in avatars, but there's several times when I remember seeing avatar fights and watching them.
Oh, yes.
The one I most remember the most was sitting out in Common Lands, because where they were pulling the Avatar of Valor, there was kind of a ridge. It almost reminded me of like something right out of the Civil War. There's a war going on out in this valley, and I'm sitting up here on this hill spectating it, watching it and cheering it on, and I'm waiting for the popcorn guy to come by or something, selling food and drink. I enjoyed watching other guilds fight. I mean, yeah. I had no skin in the game, no stake, and I was certainly not going to get any reward from it. But I just wanted to watch them do it. And they wiped over and over again, but they kept trying. And you know, I was kind of rooting for them at one point.
Yeah. I remember there was an Avatar fight out in Antonica. I'm sorry, was it an Avatar? Yeah. And it was during, I think this was when we were giving out roses.
Yes, I do remember that as well, trying to rose people during a fight.
Right, there's this whole thing going on with this avatar killing, and, you know, you see these guilds fighting over it, you know, sort of jousting and just sort of going at it, and here me and Del are running around trying to give roses to people. It was a comedic thing, but even then it seemed like there was a sense of community, even though what we were doing had absolutely nothing to do with what they were doing. You know, I recognized a lot of those names.
Yes.
Of people that were out there from the level channels or people who used to be in my guild or whatever. It was exciting.
As I said a moment ago, I was rooting for the guild to beat the Avatar of Valor. I think during that encounter, I was actually rooting for the mob a little bit. Because some of the names I did recognize, they weren't on my fan list. I'm rooting for the mob to win. You know, so there's that interest level. And as much as I like seeing sometimes the videos on YouTube after the fact that folks have posted, being there live is even more exciting. That's why you go to a sports game. You want to be part of the crowd, the action, the excitement of being right there and seeing it die or something. Or the guild die. So you're right. Those contested fights, I think, have a lot of value in them. In that sort of community building. I don't think as much as they tear down the community, they might even build it up.
Yeah, and then there's some to talk, you know, people are talking about it after the fact, maybe for hours after the fact in level chat. And even if you're not participating in the conversation, you know you were there and you saw it and you can identify what these people are talking about. So I think that, you know, if there were more contested mobs or, you know, I'm not saying bring the avatars back necessarily, but having maybe a little bit more mid-level content or even more high-level content. Or even, you know, a little bit of everything, some like lower level content so that everybody can sort of interact in this way. You know, I don't think contested mobs necessarily bring out the worst in people. I don't think that they necessarily invite camping. It doesn't have to be that way. And it might be that way some of the time, but I don't think it's that way all of the time.
Well, I think, too, it's a two-sided coin. As much as we're, I think, someone advocating that they bring some of that back, there is some onus on the community to realize that we need to buck up, too, a little bit and say, hey, this isn't going to be for everybody. It is going to be first and foremost. So don't go whining to SOE that you didn't get the pull because some other guild got there and got it first. If you want it and you're hardcore enough and you're badass enough, go do it. Don't sit there and complain. Wah, 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 somebody else beat me to it. Or, wah, 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 it was too hard and they ended up pulling it before I could and I missed out on it. I think it is the responsibility of the players to not do that. If they want that content, not to do that. And those who aren't interested in it need to, you know, kind of be on the sidelines. Don't get involved. Don't try to put yourself into that content if you're not ready to lose that content.
I would also say, though, you know, the whining, I think you're going to have that no matter what. But I think that, you know, yes, the onus is on the player, but it sort of goes back to SOE again, because they need to have a little more backbone when it comes to the whining. You don't have to give everybody everything they want all the time. I think that maybe they give us too much sometimes. And I said this way back when we were talking about maps. When they first, the travel system, they revamped that. You know, sometimes I think they give us too much of what they think we want because people complain. But people complain about everything. You give them a cookie and they complain about not having two cookies.
Right.
You know, you're going to have people complaining about everything. So I think it's a little bit of being able to draw the line and say, okay, we're not going to do this. We're going to stand our ground here and we're not going to cave in to the complainers or the whiners. You know, we believe in what we're doing and we're going to stick by this. Like the way it used to be back in the old days when we were in the dark and fed crap. Like a
uphill
bunch of
both ways with no shoes and snow.
Right.
So I'd like to see more contested mobs, and I'm comfortable with, hey, I'm not going to be able to win them all or get all of them. And I'm okay with that. And I think a lot of players would enjoy that as well.
I agree.
All right. So let's turn our attention to the Alley Angle.
All right.
It is an Alley Angle week for EQ2 Talk. So I do have a question prepared for you, Allie. Are you ready?
I believe so.
Okay. I know this is a little bit on the early side. Thanksgiving is still a little bit of a ways away, but this will probably be the last opportunity to do an Alley Angle before the Thanksgiving holiday based on our recording schedule. So this one is a little Thanksgiving Day oriented.
Okay.
So my question is, Allie, when I think of Thanksgiving, I think of three F words. Football, food, and family. What are three F words that you think of when you think of EverQuest 2?
Frustrating. Farfignugan? How about Farv? All right, no, seriously. Okay. How about Flux?
Okay.
EQ2 is in a perpetual state of change. So many things have changed over the years. I mean, actually, we've hit a milestone yesterday. What was it?
Was it the 6th anniversary?
Yes, it was. November 4th, 2004. You can't be a 6-year-old MMO and not embrace change, right? And to be a player these days, you really have to embrace that change as well. So Flux.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think we've seen changes for both the good and sometimes what we think are not the best. But I think you're right. If EverQuest 2 was the same that it was in 2004, it'd be different from what it is today. And I don't know if it would be as great as it is today.
Yeah. So for my second F word, I have fascinating. Even after 6 years, I'm still finding things that intrigue me about the game. And we sort of talked about this a little bit earlier with one of the listener topics. Last week when I did that Who Am I Smarter Are You Smarter Than a Delmon question, in doing the homework for that, I read a lot of EQ2 lore. And the lore in this game is really rich and involved. You know, it makes me wish I'd been paying attention all this time. But having that there gives me something to look forward to and something to keep my interest.
Yeah, I think fascinating is a very good word to describe it because there is so much to it. And I think I made the reference to an onion earlier. And I do believe EverQuest is a little bit like that. You keep peeling back new things and finding new fascinations underneath each layer. I do like that, yeah.
Which I think is pretty impressive after 6 years.
Absolutely.
So, and finally, it's a little bit of something from your list, Del. Family. EQ2 is an MMO. And in the past 6 years, I've made a lot of friends from EQ2, many of whom I've met in real life, either at fanfare or people who've actually come to my home and spent a weekend. I really do see these people as part of my extended family. One little illustration of that, my husband and my whole family basically has been out of town all week, so I've been sort of alone just with the dog. You know, I don't actually feel like I've been alone. You know, because I log into the game and there's my other family. So, you know, it's not that I am alone ever. You know, I feel like I have family there for me every night. It's like Cheers, only better because you get to kill shit and talk smack.
I like that. That is very true. It is. Yeah, I've had an opportunity myself even to meet folks from all over the country and all over the world. Who play this game, who I would have never met otherwise, and hear stories from them or their experiences or where they are in their lives. And yeah, it's an amazing thing like that. So here we have this backdrop of a game and all the people that we've met at fanfare. It's just amazing that based on a game, I don't think a console game, some first-person shooter on the PlayStation 3 would have this type of friendship and family that you mentioned. It's just amazing. And after all these many years and still going strong. I agree. I noticed that you somehow didn't fit food in your description.
Well, that doesn't make my list of top three things that I think of when I think of EverQuest 2. So why does it make your list, though? Food?
Food makes every list.
What's your favorite food in EverQuest 2?
Right now, Kit Kats.
I don't think they have those.
Oh, there's a litter of them around my desk right now.
Maybe that can drop from next year's, goblins, or who drops the nutty chocolate bars?
I don't remember.
Zombies?
Maybe zombies.
For next year's Knights of the Dead, maybe they can add in Kit Kat bars.
Kit
for
Kat
Galmont.
Bars. Those would be very good. Kit Kat.
I wonder if Avatars used to drop candy.
I don't know. Was there a special Avatar candy?
I don't know, but I want to know.
It would, if Avatars did drop candy, it would be like the whole big jumbo Hershey bar.
It would be like the giant Hershey's Kiss.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the little big, fun size. Right. Be the big mega ones there. Fantastic. So what were,
all the way through.
What were the three F words again for you? I had food, family, and football for Thanksgiving, and for EverQuest 2, you had?
Flux, fascinating, and family.
Ah, very nice. Okay, did we have anything else for this episode number 10 of EQ2 Talk?
No, but 10 is a milestone, too, so.
It is double digits.
Yeah.
It's all downhill from here.
Oh, boy.
Although I don't know how far down we have to go. So we should probably then say thank you to everybody who took the time to listen to this episode of EQ2 Talk. We certainly hope that you enjoyed it. If you have any suggestions, comments, feedback, want to talk about any of the things that we have been talking about here on the show, you can reach us. So for me, that's Delmon at EQ2Talk.com.
And I'm Allie at EQ2Talk.com.
Or you can catch us in-game as well. So for me, that's EQ2.unrest.delmon. That's D-E-L-L-M-O-N.
And I'm at EQ2.unrest.alicious, A-L-I-S-C-I-O-U-S.
And you can also check us out, Allie, where?
Well, you can check out our website at EQ2Talk.com. And from there, you can check us out on Facebook. And don't forget to read the Allie Angle blog.
Yes, and we'd also like to say thank you to McDonald's, our corporate sponsor this week. McDonald's, home of the McRib. McDonald's, I'm loving it.
And thanks to all our listeners who wrote in. We really appreciate the feedback. Keep on writing.
Say goodnight, Allie.
Goodnight, Allie.